Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, this is Todd Glass, and you're listening to Storyworthy. How do you like that?
Hey, it's Michael Stahl David from the film In Your Eyes. I got some acid. Come take it with us at Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and this is a Best of Storyworthy.
Woo! Best of Storyworthy.
It is Best of Drug Mishaps.
Boing. Mishaps. I'll tell you something, Hannes. A Best of Drug Mishaps, we had quite a few stories to choose from.
We had so many. Once I was like, well, let me, you know, this drug story might be good. And I'm like, I wonder if there's anything I can pair it with. There's like dozens.
Yeah. This could be like Best of Drug Mishaps 1.
That's true.
And these Best of episodes on Storyworthy are a lot of fun because what we do is we pair two stories from the past and we air those stories. And tonight is no exception. Our first storyteller is Todd Glass. He's been on the show a couple of times.
Yes, and he is a maniac. You've seen him your whole life, basically.
Your whole life, yeah. Todd Glass has so much to say, and he's so super fun. And the second guest is actor Michael Stahl David, who is actually on fire right now as well, and he's doing super well. So we've got two very talented storytellers talking about drugs tonight. What else do you want?
I would like a bourbon and perhaps a small caramel cake. I can't have any of these things, so why don't we just get to the story?
That's like your drug, isn't it?
Caramel cake. Oh, that would be nice.
I've had a couple of drug mishaps, and it usually involves drugging my friends with marijuana edibles.
Yeah. No, I luckily have never fallen. Now, you would think, since I love eating things and that's my vice, I would have fallen for the drug cookie problem, but that wasn't me. That was our friend Jim Coughlin, friend of the show.
Oh, at my party, right.
Yes.
I had a Christmas party in which I had laid out a plate of marijuana cookies, but there was a sign, there was a table tent, and it said, Magic Cookies, Merry Christmas. And that means you eat maybe a half, and in fact, I had cut them in half.
Yeah, well, I not make it to this party? Because that sign would have in no way indicated to me that there was marijuana in the cookies.
But you're at my house.
Well, I assume there's marijuana in the couch cushions in the air.
And there is.
But like,
that's what I'm saying. You're at my house.
Water.
If you're at my house and I'm having a Christmas party, there's a sign that says Magic Cookies. You should think about that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, some people, the table tent got knocked over and a couple of people overdosed. But, you know, honestly, it happens one time and your friends never let you forget.
I know. A couple of dead bodies and suddenly Christmas is spoiled forever.
All right, you guys, before we hear our first story by Todd Glass, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great.
Yeah, you can just do something as simple as tell your friends about it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, when you see us post a new episode, just share that. You don't even have to copy and paste, you lazy, you wonderful, wonderful people.
Yes.
You can just hit share.
That's
just
lovely.
Just share it.
And we appreciate that. You can also head on over to our Facebook page and like us there. Follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy and buy my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life. I've had some really nice reviews recently on Amazon. And the people say on Amazon, they say, I knew Christine Blackburn from podcasting, or I knew Christine Blackburn from the Storyworthy podcast, and now I'm reading her book.
That's
and so
right.
It's kind of nice.
Exactly.
It's a little tie through.
And you can go to storyworthypodcast.com, you click on the Amazon link, you go and buy Christine's book, and if you want to buy other things, buy them too, and
we'll
get a little bit of taste.
That's a good idea.
Through the Amazon
link. We also have a PayPal donation link on our page, and people actually do that, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, we're like PBS. We beg for money, but we don't give you a tote bag.
That's exactly what it's like.
And we have very few PBS programs.
All right, you guys. Todd Glass is on right now. Todd, as you know, is a comedian who aggressively tours the country.
Aggressively.
He is the host of The Todd Glass Show, which is a fabulous podcast that he produces so well. I love his production value is terrific.
Yes.
And, of course, Todd has appeared on Conan O'Brien and Jimmy Kimmel, more recently on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And his new book, The Todd Glass Situation, can be found everywhere. You can find him on his website, toddglass.com, and, of course, on Twitter, at Todd Glass. So, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for the amazing Todd Glass.
Hello. Well, first of all, well, we could talk about that later. You guys really do turn off your mics. Holy crap. So I should just start my story. Is that right?
Please.
Okay. Hope I'm doing this right. All right. Well, you know, when I'm listening to you talk about that story with the pot cookies, I was thinking, it's funny because I agree. I was like, oh, you didn't label them good enough. But then I think of my own story where I didn't label them at all. Now, there's a little bit of a I'll explain something at the end of this story where there's an interesting twist. But I had a party, and my friend, with air quotes, that's how I say my friend, my partner in crime, my significant other, all the words that I hate, you know, why can't it be something like so? And there's a reason that I have to tell that part of the story, because once before I told the story and I made it my mom, but I'll explain later why that got me into a little bit of a lot. It was easier just to say my mom, but it wasn't my mom. It was my partner in crime's mom. Our crime is disobeying God. Anyway, a fake God. I want to get into this pot story, but I never knew after I, you know, did Marc Maron and I came clean about myself. I didn't know what to reference the person I was with, and some emailer emailed me and he said, why don't you say my partner in crime? I was like, I like that. And our crime is disobeying God. So I thought that was funny. So now, you know, so it's an important part of the story. So we have a party and there's some pot cookies. Now, look, I should tell you now that we know that it was really stupid of us. So you don't need to, well, you hear the story, go, how could they put cookies out with no? Yes, in hindsight, I'm aware of that. I am aware that it was, you don't do that. They were just in the kitchen. All my friends smoked pot, but I didn't think about Chris's mom. So we're outside, we're all eating dinner, and we notice there's something definitely different, but we have no idea. We're not going to put that together. And she's like cleaning the table aggressively, and she's taking chicken bones and jamming them in the garbage disposal, like, grr, grr, grr. And I notice, I go, like, she's not usually like that. She's, you know, a French woman. She's, you know, she's usually just, you know, just out there relaxing. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I don't know why. Now, we all were on pot cookies, so we were. At that time, I didn't do edibles that often. It was a new feeling for me. No one explained to me that, like, you get a body high. It was just great. And people that won't smoke pot will eat a piece of a cookie. So you have this just – and it's a very good feeling. We're all sitting around a table. There's 20 of us sitting around this big table outside eating dinner. It's dark. There's just some candles on the table. It's just – it's a really cool atmosphere. And all of a sudden, my friend Gina goes, just – I don't know how she figured this out. She goes, did she have any of those pot cookies? And I'm like, shut the fuck up. I go, Chris, did your mom have any of the pot cookies? We're like, we sort of knew right then. Yep, that's what's going on. It all made sense. So Chris goes into the kitchen and he goes, Mom, did you have any of those cookies? Not pot cookies, just cookies. Because, you know, you still feel like a kid in front of your mom. Like, you don't want to, you know, we're allowed to smoke pot. But, you know, it's not about we're allowed to smoke pot. We did make her do something she might not want to done. And I think that's where the embarrassment came in. So she goes, yes. He goes, how many? She goes, three. So we're like, oh, my God. So we don't know what to do. We don't want to tell her there's pot in them. So we get a little – we don't know what to do. We go outside, and then we think it's hysterical. So we're all around the table laughing hysterically. Out of nowhere, my friend comes up, Gina again. She goes, Chris, your mom just came up to me and took her hand. Make like a wavings – like make pretend you're like imitating the ocean going up and down, up and down, up and down. She goes, Gina, is it weird to do this with your hand? Because I keep doing this with my hand. So I go, what'd you tell her? She goes, oh, I said, yeah, it's very normal. Why scare her? Like, oh, everybody does that. That was a good answer. Why go? No. So we don't want to tell her she's high. But in this period, there is a period we know that's going to be short-lived because we had one and we were out of our minds. So we know, you know, she's going to get there where it's not. But there was a period for about an hour where she was so funny and we were laughing. But we don't want to tell her, you know, she's feeling okay, but we go down that short-lived. Then Gina says something else. How does she figure this out? She goes, Todd, I lie about how many cookies I eat. You asked her so casually. She didn't know she was under, you know, interrogation. She goes, like, if someone asked me how many cookies, and they were like the size of a quarter, you know, you could eat 15 at a party. She goes, you need to really find out how many she had and tell her what's going on. So Chris goes into the kitchen. He goes, Mom, he goes, there was pot in those cookies. Like, we need to know how many you had. She goes, oh, my gosh. Because she has a, I can't do a French accent. She goes, I think I had like six. They're so little. Now we're getting nervous because she's getting higher and higher. And now she knows why. And she's starting to sweat. And they're giving her ice towels for her head. Well, we don't want to call the police. Now, keep in mind, we're high. Are we okay? We good with them?
Oh, yeah.
We're high, too. So, like, every time somebody gets nervous, we're going, we're high, too. Like, you know, someone's like, don't overreact. I know I'm high. I don't know what to do. So we go, well, we should call. We have to call an ambulance. Yeah. Because she could go through it herself. Nothing would have happened. She would have gotten nauseous. She would have, you know, your equilibrium is gone. You get dizzy. You get nauseous. You get, and, you know, cold rags would have just, you know, brought her through it. But that's not fair to her. When I knew an ambulance would come, they'd probably give her a sedative or they'd put her in the ambulance and she'd feel good. Well, we'll hear the story. So the ambulance comes, and while they're on the phone with the ambulance, well, Chris is on the phone with the ambulance. They go, well, listen, we have to tell them what the why, because we don't want to say, oh, she's just acting weird. What if they give her a medicine that if they knew she had pot in her, they wouldn't have given her? You know what I mean? We're trying to go, we have to be honest. We have to tell, we want her to get better. We have to give them, you know, the medical condition. Thank you. So they go, well, listen, it's not a big deal, but since there are drugs involved, we're like, all right, relax. It's not like we're shooting up heroin over here. We do have to send the police. Oh. I'm like, oh, no. Keep in mind, we're high, you know. So I call my friend who's a cop, and I go, John, like, here's what's going on. You know, what do I do? He goes, well, listen, the odds are they're not going to – they don't care. He goes, but – he goes, all I can tell you is act a little dumb but not really dumb. And I knew what he meant. Like, don't disrespect the cop. He, you know, don't disrespect the cop, but you can play a little stupid. I'm okay. So I go outside. First thing I do is, like, I don't smoke that much at this time. Like, now I do. I smoke probably 3 or 4 days a week. But at that time, I had, like, a one-hitter with a teeny bit of pot. I went outside, and I heaved it up on the garage in my house out back because I thought, like, they're going to ransack the house. I'm high. So, and then I don't know what I'm going to do. So then all of a sudden the cops come. Now, I think it's better to tell you this story because it makes it better. She really was nice and didn't care. In hindsight, we didn't know that. She walks into the living room. You know, they're in a police uniform. It's very intimidating. The other cop walks in. He goes, what happened? The fire department comes in. They
it's a party.
Yeah, it's a party. Yeah. So you know, I'm trying to keep the story in order. So she goes, first question she says is, she goes, who brought the pot cookies? You know, not in our head, it's like, who brought the pot cookies? Probably she's just being conversational. It's not the end of the world. She's a cop. She's seen a lot. And act dumb, but not really dumb. Act dumb, but not really dumb. I go, I don't know who brought them. She goes, did you know there was pot in them? Act dumb, but not really dumb. I go, well, in my head, I think, I just don't want anyone to get arrested. But, you know, I go, yes, we did know there was pot in them. So anyway, she goes, where are the rest of them? And then Chris got nervous. He goes, my mom ate them all. We're like, all right, you don't have to overreact and get nervous. So like, she didn't really care. And then the ambulance is taking her out, and she's on the stretcher, and she starts saying, oh, the firemen are so good looking. And then Chris is high, too. He has a great relationship with his mom, a silly relationship. They have a sense of humor. He goes, Mom, stop it. They're going to think you're a whore. So they take her out on a stretcher, and, you know, they don't really care. I feel like this story gets anticlimactic towards the end. So the next day, all my neighbors go, hey, I heard Chris's mom got really high last night. And we're like, oh, why are you telling everybody this? You know, we don't want her to tell all the neighbors, but no one cares, really. And she got in the ambulance. They gave her a sedative, and she was back home in 15 minutes, and she felt great. And we laughed about the night. And there you go.
And we're back. Oh, I do love that story. So many elements.
Well, Todd is so entertaining.
You have the gay couple. You have the French mother-in-law, sort of. I don't think they were married
at
this point.
Well, and then there was an ambulance. As soon as you call an ambulance.
That, see, now again, and we said this before we heard this initially, you labeled your cookies. not well, in my opinion, but you did label them. They did not label their cookies at all.
Yeah, Todd didn't even try. He didn't even try to label the cookies.
It didn't even occur to him. I mean, frankly, if my mother-in-law were coming to the party, I'd be pretty sure to make sure she didn't get any pot cookies.
Well, what I did after that incident that I had where I drugged my friends, I decided to keep the pot cookies like in the refrigerator in a Tupperware container so yes. that if you would like one, you have to come and it was more purposeful.
Well, it's kind of like the good wine or the good beer at the party.
You keep that.
You put out
side.
The Pabst Blue Ribbon right. for the damn hipsters.
Right.
And if somebody wants a quality beer, they got to go in the fridge.
That's
you got to get it
for
them.
The top shelf, right? The good alcohol is on the top.
Yeah.
It takes
exactly.
a little bit of effort. And so that's my recommendation to you out there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
If you'd like to drug your friends.
By the way, it sounds like I was judging Todd Glass. I shouldn't be judging Todd Glass.
No. Just,
they made a mistake.
Oh, yeah. But it was no big deal and it all worked out fine.
It all worked out fine. She ended up, you know, but I do love the idea that she's like, oh, the firemen are so sexy. Mm. It's like, oh. Hilarious.
There
Thanks.
Is something about a man in a fireman uniform. I mean,
yes.
this is the way it fits their body. I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know. I think they should just bring out uniforms like popular clothing wear. Like, why don't men just wear uniforms around? Because it kind of looks hot.
It would actually probably be better. It's like an old Jerry Seinfeld joke about why men wear tuxedos at weddings. Because she's just going to marry a guy in a tuxedo. First guy drops out, you just move him down the line. You marry the next guy. But, like, men look best in suits and like tuxedos and uniforms. Like
they do.
When men are left to their own clothes devices, it's usually a disaster.
It all goes down.
Unless they're gay. So straight men cannot. So
but
you're
a
absolutely
really
right.
Nice suit on a man. Yeah, that's
men
nice.
Should just have to, yeah, men should be issued. Here is your casual suit of clothes and here is your formal suit of clothes. And that's and then every man would look good.
And that's I think what you need to wear.
That's yeah. And honest. I think most men would be like, yes, that's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. How about you? One time we were in Big Bear, you and I,
yeah.
and we're going to go out on a hike, and you were hiking in flip-flops. What the hell was that?
That was an error on my part.
Talk about a wardrobe malfunction.
I thought we were going on a L.A. hike, which meant we were going to walk through Griffith Park for 5 minutes and then get a latte.
No, we were going for
a
hike in
the mountains. You were
actually
going in the middle of the fucking woods like some kind of animal. Well, I live in a city for a reason.
If you have on proper footwear, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's still not that much fun.
All right, you guys, it's time for our next story. Now, Michael Saul David, wow, he is fantastic. He is an actor. He is from Chicago, Illinois. He's also been directing lately, and he's known for a couple of his movies, Cloverfield, In Your Eyes, and The Congress. He's actually very hot right now. You can find
And he
him.
Was so hot that Christine was like all flustered when he was here in person. She was like, oh my.
I got slightly flustered. It was very slight. Give me a break.
Very slight. They had to sell the chair.
You can
That's how flustered.
All right, you can find him at his website, michaelstahl-david.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Michael Saul David.
Hi, guys. Hi, thanks. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for having me. So this play takes place in Chicago, where I'm from, and I was 16 years old, and I wasn't even supposed to be out that night. I was grounded. But I snuck out of the house because Eugene Westbrook was having a house party at his house. This is one of the kids from drama. And so I sneak over to his house, and I get there, and it's a bunch of friends there, a bunch of people there, upperclassmen there. And I'm getting drunk. I'm having a great time. And I've got a pretty good buzz on. And then I see some of the upperclassmen in the hallway, and they're standing around this paper, this blotter paper. And I hear that it's Eugene's older brother's acid that he was supposed to sell, but that was very weak. So they were just divvying it up and taking it, very carefully cutting it with scissors. You mentioned earlier that it's incredibly potent. I was thinking on the way over here how to describe the size. I mean, an appropriate dose is about the size of a single Rice Krispie, okay? I walk by drunk. I'm like, oh, it's acid. It's weak. That's awesome, man. And just rip a chunk off and stick it in my mouth without thinking. Probably the size of, like, a stamp, you know, big. And then just, like, you know, waltz down the hallway, whoop, and I go and find the girl that I was sort of seeing at the time named Danica Kopanky. Danica Kopanky was a girl who drew big smiley faces on her jeans, like on each thigh, and was straight edge, was the stage manager of the first play I ever did, and her mother tutored me in math, okay, and we sort of made out and stuff, so I find Danica, we go off to Gene's mom's room, we're making out on the bed, and that's when it hits me. and I feel like there are rats crawling through my veins. Now, I tripped before, and I'd experienced the sort of, like, giggly, wavy, everything's funny, things are weird. I'm having a fun time trying to put words together. This was not bad. This was, there's rats in my veins very quickly. And then every sound, I was remember lying there and being like, what is that? What is that sound? What is that sound? What is that sound? And she was like, it's the party downstairs. It's people hanging out. I was like, I just have to go to sleep. I have to go to sleep. Which, of course, didn't work. At this point, basically, I black out. I mean, from my memory. I don't remember what happens. I remember vomiting, right? Vomiting and her in the bathroom, her trying to take care of me. Hours are passing. The night is getting late. And then at some point, all I could think was, I have to fight this. I have to fight this. And like many, this is in Chicago, like many house parties that start off kind of, you know, normal enough, like by the later they get, the address gets circulated, you know, pre-text, just like word of mouth, you know, carrier pigeon. So like all these graffiti kids had crashed the party. So now there are all these like other kids there, you know. And I remember seeing this dude, IROC, who tagged IROC. And if you asked him why, he'd be like, cuz fool, IROC. And he was this kind of like tough kid, you know, Puerto Rican kid. And he was smoking a cigarette. And I was like, oh, it all comes down to the cigarette. I just need a cigarette. If I have a cigarette. And I get a cigarette. Next thing I know, it's just like a single butt in my hand. It just evaporates. And then IROC is like, hey, man, let me get my lighter back. And then I'm like, this is it. I have to stand up. I have to fight this trip. And I stand up. And I'm like, you ain't getting your lighter back, motherfucker. And he looks at me for a second, contemplating, like, you know, beating the shit out of me, I'm sure. And he's just like, you know what? You're lucky you're high right now. You are lucky you're high. And so at this point, I'm like, all right, I'm good. I'm fighting the trip. I'm ready to leave. Danica's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, let me just get my bike, and I'm going to be on my way. I was only, like, a mile from home. It was dawn at this. I mean, it was, like, 7, 8 in the morning. So I remember she's like, okay, and says bye to me. And I'm like walking with my bike. And I remember I get to an alleyway and I'm like, hold up, alleyway. This is dangerous. And I like I dismount and very carefully like walk across the alley. And then I just drop the bike on the sidewalk. I see this random vestibule to this apartment building. I just walk up the steps, open the door to the vestibule, and sit down in the hallway. Now, at this point, my parents have woken up and realized that I'm not home. Again, I've snuck out, you know. And I remember my mom telling me that when she told me her side of the story that, like, they were like, well, should we call the cops or start calling around to hospitals? They're like, well, let's go get some bagels and then if he's not back by then. So I'm sitting in the vestibule on another planet. I look out the door, the glass door, and there are my parents outside. And I'm like, oh my God, they planned this whole thing. They orchestrated this whole thing. And I come outside and they're like, Michael, whose house is that? And I'm like, who the fuck cares? And I make a snowball and I throw it at the house to illustrate who the fuck cares. And at this point, I see them kind of have a little conference and I hear them whispering. And my mom's like, my dad's like, well, do you want to walk him home? And she's like, well, you're the one who didn't notice about it. You're the one who didn't. And I don't know what to make of that. So then my dad and I start walking down the street to my house. And I, you know, something that happens when you're tripping really hard is that you can't choose a word to make a sentence with. Every sentence begins with a word, but there's a choice. And how could you proceed? The only way I could communicate, I decided, was to sing in a reggae song. Like a reggae rap song. So my dad's like, Michael, what happened? I'm like, well, I went to the party and I had a drink and then I smoked some reefer and a rick-a-dink-a-dink. I mean, I don't even, not that that worked either. Literally, that was the tune, like I remember. So we finally get back to my house. And another thing that being high on a psychedelic does is that every visual symbol, every idea has this exponential meaning. It's like a pebble dropping in a pond and the ripple effect of it. It's like you see something and it stands for, whew. So I come inside and I see my little brother, Andrew, sitting on the floor playing Nintendo. I'm like, oh my God, that's my childhood. That's my childhood. And then they're like, I still am not saying anything. My brother's like wide-eyed, terrified, looking at me. My parents are like, so Michael, you know, what happened? He's like, I don't know. He can't remember. You know what? Put on some of his rap music. Maybe that'll bring him back. But they can't find that. So instead they put on The Bobs, which is, if you don't, The Bobs are an a cappella group who make the sounds of an entire band with their mouths. This is some trippy shit. It's like, ba-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum. And literally the words were like, it's not in stairwells, no, no, it's not in the alleyway. I was like, what the? This is talking about my night. They like start going through my pockets. They're like, pull out a dollar. They're like, I'm like, no, it's not about the money, man. It's not about that life. You know, it's like everything. So I'm not getting anywhere. So my mom's like, well, let's put them in the bath. Which, I'm 16. I don't take baths, you know. So nothing would make me feel more like a mental patient. I mean, and I go in there and I'm sitting naked in the bathtub looking at my like shriveled scrotum, just confused. And I put on a robe. I put on my mother's robe. Now I'm in a robe padding around my house. I look into my parents' eyes and they look so worried and concerned. And I see the lines kind of, you know, around their eyes. And I start, and that's when I, in my mind, I realize, oh, wow, I've been tripping for a week. This has been happening for a week. And they're trying to get me to remember who I am. And my, look at them. They've been through the ringer this week. You know, like that's in my head. And so, you know, basically at that point, I pat around in the robe for a little while. And I just kind of start to mellow down where I can, I remember now Danica and I remember, oh my God. So I make some phone, I just get on the phone. I'm able to articulate, I'm okay. Bye-bye. And yeah. And I came down, thankfully, because not all people do. And I didn't do acid again for months.
And we're back. Oh, my God. See, these acid stories, we've had several of them, and they freak me out every time.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, I want to be insane. I'm always amazed.
And then you can do that to yourself. You can make yourself insane.
And I'm just always amazed when it's like it must be some sort of human sympathy reflex that makes them not get stabbed or punched in the face. Like he almost got punched by this guy, this Puerto Rican guy. But it's like you just endlessly describe all these moronic a-hole things you're doing, and it's like, and then some. I just walked away, and nobody said anything.
Well, Michael was only 16 years old. That's what's so crazy about this whole story.
Yeah, and just and having. He had done acid in the past, but just a little bit, and just took way too much.
Right. And then, of course, he's done it since. So there you go. I think I'm going to drop acid. That's what I think I'm going to do. When I turn 50, I'm going to get naked pictures taken, and then I'm going to drop acid.
In that order? I think you're going to drop acid first.
And then that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. No, I think you need to be freed up for the naked pictures.
Right.
I don't think the acid.
Okay.
You really see now. You said that as a joke, but I think you're really thinking about naked.
No, I'm making a checklist.
Okay,
it's like my bucket list of things to do when I turn 50.
Okay.
All right.
Well, who's going to take these pictures? Are you going to get a professional?
What we're going to do is we're going to put out a contest to our Storyworthy listeners.
Oh, sure. Sure. Whoever is on our Patreon, whoever's the highest level
whoever
of Patreon,
pays us the
can
most.
Bring their iPhone to LA and take pictures of Christine.
Oh my gosh! Okay, you guys, this has been a lot of fun.
It'll be here in the Sideshow Network in front of this banner,
right under this fluorescent
under
lighting.
The fluorescent light from the top. That is what. That's what I'm saying.
We need to change around here. Sideshow Network, we've done a lot of things in the studio, and it's a lot better than it ever has been. But the next thing that has to go, these fluorescent lights. You heard it here first, Maria.
she's nodding her head. No, but remember, we had Angel.
Angel and Boris.
It's like nude photo shirts. It involves a lot of body makeup and a lot of hair and a lot of lighting. Grooming. It's all about the lighting.
Angel Boris. She's a Playmate centerfold who's been on Storyworthy talking about how she became a centerfold. So you'll have to look for
and
that
you
as
want,
well.
Yeah, look that up. And it's like, you can't just people, you know, well, you see it on the internet. People are like, I'll just take a picture of my genitals and put that up. It's like, okay, it's not that easy.
How about when people take a picture in the bathroom mirror of something and then you see their hand taking the picture with their phone? You know, they're holding it off to the side, but you can see the reflection
in the
mirror.
I'm afraid I'm going to discuss something much worse than that. Not disgusting, but worse. It was some stupid thing that you see on Facebook. It's like major parenting fails. And it's women taking supposedly sexy photos of themselves, and of course their small child is somewhere in the reflection of the mirror. There's the 2-year-old or their toddler is in the back. They're sticking their ass in the in the window, in the mirror, taking a picture of it over their shoulder. But in the mirror, you can also see their kid sticking their head around the window like, Mom, I'm hungry.
Humorous. Mom. What is it called?
Like bad parenting.
That's very funny. I'm going to look for that.
Yeah, it should be – it's somewhere on Facebook
Mama,
right
can
now.
I watch a show just after Mommy's done taking this selfie of her vagina?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hang on.
All right, you guys. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network for helping us out with our best of drug mishaps, including Maria Spertolozzi.
Who gave us the title Drug Mishaps. We were flailing. We were like drug mistakes, drug overdoses,
too many drugs.
And she rolled her eyes at us and said, old people, listen. The word you're looking for is drug mishaps.
And she was absolutely
right. She was absolutely right.
All right, you
guys.
Because
you want to imply shenanigans,
but not death. That's right. I also want to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote the theme song to Storyworthy, also to
many a drug mishap. Wait a minute. His whole story was about taking acid. We have so many acid stories.
And, of course, on behalf of our storytellers tonight, Todd Glass and Michael Stahl David. What amazing, talented men they are.
They are.
Thank you guys so much for letting us re-air your story. And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.